All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton, and first up on the show today is Gareth Porter, the intrepid reporter with the name Porter in his name. Porter, reporter. Yeah. IPSnews.net, Interpress Service, IPSnews.net, and of course, antiwar.com/Porter for all those archives. This one, I really like it because I just love the history of this whole story. It's such an intriguing story to me and a very important one up to the very present day. U.S. rejected 2005 Iranian offer ensuring no nuclear weapons. By Gareth Porter, antiwar.com/Porter. Welcome back to the show. Gareth, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks again.
That George Bush really was a lousy president, wasn't he?
He was a terror. He was a terror, particularly on Iran and Iraq, of course. Yeah, I mean, this story is bringing back to memory, of course, a lot of other things as well. But
I get mad about Barack Obama all the time. But yeah, just reading this article brought me back to those days. And I'm just so glad they're over. Not that this is much an improvement, but at least it's different. You know what I mean? It's like going from Truman to Eisenhower. You're still screwed. But
I'd say the difference between Truman and Eisenhower was much greater than between Bush and Obama on Iran. I have to say that now.
Yeah, Eisenhower did kill a lot less people.
Yeah, well, I mean, particularly on the diplomacy of Iran, I mean, the similarities between Obama's and Bush's diplomacy now becomes daily greater and greater.
Yeah. Well, and both of them actually have a lot in common with Eisenhower there, with the covert action and support for terrorists and stuff.
Of course.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about nukes. First of all, I guess, could you please maybe start by telling them about the disclosure of the Natanz facility and the big scandal, basically, at the start of the Bush era, which was, oh my goodness, they have this secret facility, and so now everyone's supposed to believe they're making nuclear bombs, and it's a big crisis, and we're going to get the Europeans to negotiate for us, and, you know, kind of give us a little bit of the background so people have something to stand on while you fill them in the rest of the details.
In 30 seconds or so, the point about Natanz is that it was indeed the kickoff of this 10 years of conflict with Iran over its nuclear program. And you're correct that, it was obviously the claim of, sort of unveiling, of revealing Natanz, which was supposed to have been a secret facility. And the MEK, of course, made the claim in a press conference in Washington that they had discovered this secret facility. They got it wrong. They said that it was a conversion facility rather than a uranium enrichment facility. And we now know from multiple sources, as I've published before, that the MEK didn't know anything about it. I don't know if they didn't know anything about it, but they got the information from the Israelis. The Israelis had satellite photographs. They knew it was some kind of nuclear facility. They guessed it was a conversion facility, and they were wrong. But it was handed over to the MEK to launder this information. And the Bush administration, playing ball with the Israelis, very cleverly decided to make this the springboard for a whole campaign that would then make the argument that Iran had been carrying out a covert nuclear weapons program for 18 years, that they had been keeping secret their plans for enriching uranium so that they could go on and make nuclear weapons.
Right. Well, and of course, there's another much more plausible explanation, which was simply that the Americans would do everything that they could all through the George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton years to keep Russia and China from selling them even, I think the Chinese want to sell them, a turnkey light water reactor. And we wouldn't even let them do that. So they had no way to get any nuclear technology except from the black market.
Right. I mean,
the CIA's friend, A.Q. Khan.
The whole idea that there was a covert Iranian nuclear program, of course, is absolutely false. The Iranians never made any secret of their objective of mastering the fuel cycle of obtaining the technology to do so. They had perfectly above board negotiations with the Chinese, the Russians, and several other countries to obtain that technology. And the United States, of course, interfered over and over again to try to prevent them, and to a great extent successfully prevent them from getting that technology. And ultimately, they did, of course, go to the black market to get centrifuges. Right. But they never concealed the idea that they were going to have both a conversion facility. The conversion facility was certainly known to the IAEA, and you don't have a conversion facility unless you're going to have an enrichment facility. So the IAEA knew perfectly well they were going to have an enrichment facility, but they simply hadn't announced it yet, and they weren't required to announce it under the terms of their safeguards agreement with the IAEA until 6 months before the introduction of nuclear material, and that was very far into the future at that point when the MEK made their announcement.
Right, because even in 2005, they took the BBC on a tour of it with some IAEA inspectors, and the damn thing was empty. It was just
They hadn't.
That was in 2005, right?
Well, I don't remember if it was 2005, but certainly they didn't actually begin.
I remember the picture of it on the BBC website, where it's just a giant kind of underground Walmart-sized building down there or something, but there was nothing, no centrifuges spinning.
Well, I mean, they did. I think they certainly had some centrifuges there at some point in 2005. If it was early enough in 2005, it's possible that they did not.
Well, maybe I'll Google around a little bit for clarity on that point during the break.
Yeah.
Which we're almost there. By the way, of course, right around 2003, after the Natanz disclosure, but not long after it, actually, according to the CIA, I guess, according to Seymour Hersh's sources, right after America did Iran's dirty work for them and got rid of Saddam Hussein, like their agent Ahmed Chalabi had helped give us an excuse to do, that was when, according to Hersh, that was when they gave up even any idea, never mind the smoking laptop, but any idea of even pursuing nuclear weapons in 2003. It wasn't because they were so scared that we were now occupying Iraq next door. It's that they no longer had Saddam Hussein to worry about. And they never entertained the idea that they would embark in a nuclear program in a way that was antagonistic to us or Israel. That would just get them nuked. We already have them way outnumbered like that. The only reason they were even contemplating an atom bomb was to protect them from Saddam and maybe the possibility that he would reinvade them perhaps at our request. And so,
have a slightly different take on that, Scott. I'm not convinced that there was a bomb program to defend against Saddam. At any time, I think, you know, the evidence seems to me to go in the other direction, that it was proposed by high-ranking Revolutionary Guard officials that they embark on a nuclear weapons program during the last phase of the war against Iraq. But the evidence is pretty clear that Ayatollah Khomeini said no. We are not going to do that. That's far out imagination at work, and instead, of course, the Ayatollah agreed to a very unpalatable peace agreement with Iraq instead, and I simply don't see the evidence that there's anything indicating a nuclear weapons program, with the possible exception of some very low level. On the back of the envelope, things having to do with basic
right.
physics on a nuclear weapon much later.
All right. Well, we got to hold it here because it's break time. I'm going to Google up that BBC story. And we'll get back and we'll get to the point with Gareth Porter. U.S. rejected 2005 Iranian offer ensuring no nuclear weapons. All right, y'all, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm talking with Gareth Porter from Interpress Service. That's ipsnews.net, antiwar.com/Porter. And just for footnote purposes, the picture isn't of the giant empty thing like I remember. The picture is just of Khatami pointing. But according to the BBC, on March the 31st, 2005. More than 30 local and foreign journalists were brought by President Mohammed Khatami down underground at Natanz. They were taken deep inside a building to a vast empty hall designed to house 50,000 enrichment centrifuges, Reuters reports. So there's my footnote.
Right. No, that would be accurate. Of course, that's describing the largest part of it where there are going to be 50,000. I think there was a separate place where they had the research reactors, centrifuges where there was a smaller set of.
I see. They already did have some set up. Well, anyway, it was all safeguarded by the IAEA. None of it was in violation. As you said, they have the rules say if you're going to introduce nuclear material, you have to give us warning 6 months before. That's the deal with the IAEA.
That's exactly right. And there's no controversy about that. Nobody's claiming the opposite. It's beyond controversy. So it's really one of the most astonishing facets of this whole history that the Bush administration was able to get away with that and make it into a media template that was used over and over again in stories after that. Mm-hmm. But let me very quickly just point out something in regard to the whole question of whether the Iranians were afraid of being attacked and that's what caused them to declare that they would not have any nuclear weapons, that it would be the policy of the country to ban nuclear weapons. Mm-hmm. Mousavian, the high-ranking diplomat of the Iranian government and also very in tight with the former president Hashemi Rafsanjani, who wrote the memoirs that I cite as the basis for my story, tells gives some insight into this question. He says that there was not really that they were not really afraid that the United States was going to attack Iran at that point. That was not the primary problem that they saw. That was really the people who were pushing the idea of cooperating with the IAEA were not people who were afraid of an attack. They were people who believed that unless they could convince the West that Iran was not intending to have nuclear weapons, that they would have just an endless problem politically, diplomatically, and otherwise with the rest of the world. And so that was the basis for that policy.
Mm-hmm. All right. So 2005, basically the Bush administration, Colin Powell, Condoleezza Rice position was, we don't talk to terrorists, we don't negotiate with evil people like this, so we'll have the E3, the British, the French, and the Germans, the European three, they will be our front men, and they will have their specific instructions from us on how to negotiate with the Iranians, which is apparently how they butted up against this perfectly reasonable offer that they turned down in 2005 that I want to hear all about.
Well, you know, just to set the stage for this, I mean, don't forget that in 2004, what the Bush administration really wanted, and you know, the neocons were in full command at this point, John Bolton and all the rest, what they really wanted was to take Iran to the Security Council immediately. I mean, they really wanted to do that in 2003. But the Iranians then entered into negotiations with the EU3, and they basically reached in November 2004 a kind of framework agreement that was supposed to be the basis for then more fundamental, I should say more detailed agreement on arrangements under which Iran would provide objective guarantees to the EU3 that it was not intending to have nuclear weapons. And on the other side, the EU3 would provide firm guarantees that Iran would, that they would have cooperation with Iran across the board on political, security, and economic affairs. So that was the basis on which they began these negotiations in 2005 on the Iranian nuclear program. And during that period of the talks, the Iranians agreed to, as a voluntary confidence-building measure, to suspend their enrichment activities, and they went beyond the enrichment, actually, and suspended even the conversion activities that they had at Isfahan. And in fact, Isfahan had not gone into operation yet, but they agreed not to go ahead with any conversion activities. So that was the situation when the Iranians then proposed in March of 2005 this very interesting proposal that they would
declare... The same time as the BBC story, where there was barely any, you said, maybe one little room off to the side where there were a couple of centrifuges spinning, and the giant room was still empty.
Yeah, it was the giant room was still empty, but they had done some work in preparing the way for enrichment through these research centrifuges. So basically, there was in suspension at that point, and the Iranians were offering to convert any enriched uranium in the future, low enriched uranium that they would achieve in the future, immediately into fuel rods for their power system for Iran. Now, this would, of course, imply, because they did not have the capability to manufacture or fabricate fuel rods at that point, that they were prepared to send the low-enriched uranium out of the country to either Russia or France, where the capability was in existence to convert the low-enriched uranium into fuel rods. It was not explicit in the document itself, in the declaration, but that was clearly what was implied. And later on, we know that the Iranians did make a proposal. That is, Mousavian himself talks about a proposal that he made to the Germans, the French, and the British, in which they would, in fact, send out of the country the low-enriched uranium to be converted to fuel rods. And so, you know, it's pretty clear that that's what they intended. And I quote the British representative to the IAEA at that point, Peter Jenkins, who was part of the British delegation, who said, you know, we were quite impressed by this proposal. And they called a halt in the discussion and said they needed time to discuss it. And then they came back later and they said, well, we're not ready to give an answer to this. We can't do that. And of course, we now know that they never intended to negotiate on this, because the fix was on. I mean, it was well understood, really, by the heads of these delegations that the United States would never stand for any proposal that allowed Iran to have even a single centrifuge in operation. And so the British were the enforcers on that within the EU3. The British said absolutely no to anything that would allow the Iranians to have centrifuges, and so the French and the Germans were clearly intrigued by this and interested in it. The French were on the fence, according to Mousavian. They were willing to talk about it, perhaps, but they weren't willing to take the initiative. And it was up to the British, and the British were, of course, enforcing the U.S. policy in this regard.
Mm-hmm. Well. And so, you know, John Bolton, he's a real tough guy, I guess, and yet what did he accomplish? I mean, how many, what's the estimated weight and the amount of enriched uranium at 4% and at 20% that they have at this point in 2012, after not exporting any of it to anywhere because they couldn't ever get a deal made?
Right, it's a few tons, basically.
A ton is 2,000 pounds.
Right. So basically, they had the opportunity here to lock Iran into a situation where they would be turning over their low-enriched uranium to a country that would be agreed to by the EU3, presumably based on the later proposal,
mm-hmm.
and they wouldn't have anything to do with it because the U.S. was insisting on zero enrichment as the goal, and that, of course, it's a great example of the perfect becoming the enemy of the good.
Yep. Well, and yeah, certainly at this point, unless they're going to get into a massive regional war or something like that, they're going to have to accept uranium, probably even up to 20% for the long haul. But anyway.
Well, I think that there's still a deal to be made on that. That's a bargaining chip for the Iranians, and they're holding on to that until they get something in return. They haven't been offered anything in return yet.
Right. And they won't.
Well, that's probably right.
Yeah. All right, everybody, that's the great Gareth Porter. Antiwar.com/Porter. Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Scott.